Great to have you with us here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Larry Mueller here, and we're going to start the show by talking with you, well, about light bulbs, for one thing. You know, there are a lot of people, I felt better when I got the new energy-saving light bulbs. Am I doing a good thing? Well, maybe I was, and maybe I wasn't. There are some other kinds of products that we buy because we think they're going to help the environment, and they can maybe, but maybe the way we use them means that we're not doing all that we could, or certainly maybe we're even wasting some energy. We'll talk about all that with John Greenler, Director of Education and Outreach at the Great Lakes Bioenergy Research Center and the Wisconsin Energy Institute. John, great to have you back.
Glad to be on. Thanks, Larry.
And also with us today, Andrea Hicks. Andrea is an assistant professor in the Department of Civil and Environmental Engineering. She specializes in quantifying the environmental impact of products and processes. How do you feel about lighting? Let's talk about that for a minute. Do you keep the lights on more because you use energy-efficient bulbs? Oh, boy. Join in the conversation. Call us at 1-800-642-1234. Email us at talk@wpr.org or post on our Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show. We'd certainly love to hear from you. And Andrea Hicks, welcome to you. Thanks for joining us today.
Hi, Larry. It's great to be here today.
Tell me a little more about the kinds of work that you're doing School of Engineering.
My work focuses on emerging and evolving products and what are the environmental impacts and how do we think about their trade-offs. I look at things like light bulbs as we go from incandescents to CFLs to LEDs, nano silver textiles, so textiles you don't have to wash because they don't smell,
mm-hmm.
and also things like you see every day in your kitchen, like your coffee maker. Mm-hmm. How I chose to brew my coffee change its environmental impact? Mm-hmm. Are single serve coffee pods bad?
Oh, so those are kind of interesting and fun things, John.
All those little pieces really add up, I think, is an important thing to appreciate.
Well, you know, take one household, but you know, how many households are there in the state of Wisconsin if we're all using K-cups?
Exactly.
For our coffee, what would that mean? Well, we'll find out about some of that. Let's talk about light bulbs. Lighting has changed a lot over the years, hasn't it?
Right, and currently we're in this evolution to go from incandescents to largely CFLs, or compact fluorescent lamps, and LEDs, or light-emitting diodes, particularly with the recent legislation passed phasing out traditional incandescent bulbs.
Yeah, so the impact of that, the hope is that it's going to save us energy, right?
Right. There's a significant gain in the amount of energy. If you look at your average 60-watt incandescent, it uses 60 watts. And if you move to a CFL, you're using about 12 watts. And then an LED is about 9.5.
Okay. So that is significant. Although I have to tell you, when I'm driving down the road at night and you come on one of the cars that has the new lighting, the new lights, sometimes it's really tough to see. So there can be some danger involved in those things, too.
Yeah, you do wonder about some of the safety concerns. I think those are halogen. Is that right? The car, the really bright car headlights? I'm not so sure.
There's also some LED ones that are coming out.
Well, hopefully they'll be better than the halogen ones, or at least people will learn how to point them properly so that they're not shining right in your face when you're meeting them on the road. Well, let me give the number again, 1-800-642-1234. Give a call if you have a question or comment along the way. You can email us at talk@wpr.org or go ahead and post on our Facebook page, titled The Larry Mueller Show. We'd love to hear from you, certainly. How much energy do we actually use for lighting? Do we have any idea?
Yes, and it's actually gone down. In 2001, we used about 8.2 quadrillion British thermal units in the U.S. for lighting. And that dropped to 6.9 in 2013, which was about 18% of total U.S. electricity usage.
So 18% of all of our use is from lights.
For electricity.
For electricity. Oh, my goodness. Well, you know, you're flying into a town, over into a city at night, and you look at the lights, and I mean, it's absolutely amazing. You wonder, gosh, couldn't some of those be turned off?
Well, turned off, we're just pointed down, right?
Or pointed
so all that
down.
Light that you see when you're on a plane, we know is largely wasted light because it's, you know, it's not illuminating, you know, what's below, which is probably what's most important. So there's a lot of technology to be more efficient, and then just, you know, ways of making sure that that light that we do generate, you know, goes where we want it to, so we don't need as much of it.
Well, we have so much new technology, and it's really fun. But Charlie in Winona, Minnesota has a question. Let's go there. Charlie, hi. Thanks for calling.
Well, we have
oh, we're not hearing you, Charlie, but I know what you're going to ask. If we're saving energy, why do our energy bills keep going up?
Well, really, you know, I think, you know, that's it's in some ways that's kind of a bit of a systems question, because there's two parts to our energy bill. There's, you know, how much electricity we're using, and then there's how much, you know, does each unit of that electricity cost. And so you really need to look at the balance of the two of those. And one of the things that is important when we look, you know, especially when we look nationwide, you know, where we get our electricity from varies enormously. Here, you know, in Wisconsin, the majority of our electricity, if I'm correct, I believe, you know, comes from coal fire power plants, and that coal is coming from, you know, most of it's coming from quite far away, from Wyoming and similar types of distances. You know, if you go to across our state lines to the west, and you go to Iowa, you know, they're significantly building up their wind power. I think 30% of their electricity now comes from wind. If you head down towards Illinois, you're going to find a lot more nuclear. If you go to the mm-hmm. Pacific Northwest, where they have a lot of rain, a lot of mountains, hydro becomes very, very significant. And the prices of all of these, you know, really can vary depending upon the efficiency of generation. Demand for the raw materials such as coal, petroleum products. There's a very wide range of in the market for a lot of these materials. So there's a lot to that, a lot behind that question.
Gail in Fish Creek, it's your turn. Hi, Gail. Thanks for calling.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I'm wondering about reports that I've read over the last few years about the toxic substance that's in LED lighting, and that there's actually doctors now that are saying not having LED in your home or having exposure to it because it's got an aluminum gallium arsenide in it, and it can be bad for kidneys and lungs and the reproductive system in animals. And what I'm thinking is the street lights with the birds, can that be one of the reasons why our bird populations are actually decreasing? Because the reproductive systems are getting upset by these LED lights in neighborhoods.
Well, I don't think we can answer the second part of that question having to do with birds. Or maybe we can. What do you think, Andrea?
Well, I'm not sure about the birds, but yes, in general, LED lighting does have some heavier metals and some rare earth elements. However, based on some studies I've read, they're largely embodied in the LED and don't come out of the LED while it's in its service life. There have been some data recently from the American Medical Association that worries about the color temperature of LEDs and the fact that the cooler temperatures have potential for things like melatonin suppression, which has... there's some literature out there on incidences of cancer rates in night shift workers from light at different times than our bodies are set up for.
Oh.
Yeah, especially this time of year, it begins to become an issue as we're into fall and our days are getting shorter, and that wavelength, I think, yeah, there's a growing body of research about how important it is, just not how much, but the quality of it as well.
Well, that brings up the whole issue about if we're assessing environmental impacts here, now we've got something that uses less electricity, but the product, what about the cost of producing those products, and do you figure that in when you're looking at overall environmental impact?
You do, and typically I use something called life cycle assessment, where you look at the environmental impact of a product from cradle to grave. So when you're mining raw materials, when you're manufacturing it, when it's use phase, and when it's the end of the life. And typically with lighting, the use phase, so when you take it home, plug it in, turn on your lights, has the most environmental impact.
Okay, so just when it's turned on, that's more than the value. But what about how much does it cost to produce a light bulb, an LED versus say an incandescent, and what materials are used, and over time does that the length of time that the light mm-hmm. stays, does that keeps working, does that make it sort of even out?
Right, and that's a wonderful question. So they have vastly different lifetimes when you think about lighting technologies. A conventional 60-watt incandescent bulb only has about 1,000 hours of service life. However, when we start looking at compact fluorescents, we get about 10,000 hours, and LEDs are about 25,000 hours.
I can believe that because there's I often fall asleep in the evening reading a book and that light stays on for many many hours, and I keep wondering when is it ever going to burn out.
Yeah, so I mean there can be it's a bit of a whatever quote unquote cash flow type of an issue. I mean there's more of an investment when you're buying an LED, but it's clear that in the long run they're more than pay off just in terms of straight economics because they last so much longer, especially compared to an incandescent bulb.
Yeah. Well, Richard in Iron Ridge, your turn. Hi, Richard. Thanks for calling.
Oh, it's actually Lime Ridge.
Oh, Lime Ridge. Sorry.
Okay. My question or concern is I've been using the newer bulbs, and the light output is not the same as with the older bulbs. I'm thinking of some of these like candelabra type bulbs that mm-hmm. you have a fixture over your dining room table or somewhere, and you just can't get the output out of them. So if you've got like five bulbs or whatever up there, you don't get the same output.
Well, you want to talk about that, Andrea?
Sure. Well, there's a two-factor issue going on. Particularly with LEDs, the lighting is more directional. So you won't get that necessarily that warm effect everywhere where that glow. Also, there's challenges with equivalencies. So in the past, we thought of a 60-watt bulb as a 60-watt bulb, and that's how much light I get. And a 60-watt bulb is equivalent to about 800 lumens, or a measure of light. So the big question is whether you're replacing a bulb with an equivalent lumen amount, even though all of these watt measures have changed.
Yeah, so can you do that? I mean, can you have... I can see where Richard's going on this. We have a similar problem in my studios, my student studios, where it does not seem nearly as bright as it used to.
You can. So part of the new packaging, and it looks a little bit like a nutrition label like you would find on your food.
Okay.
Where it'll equate how many lumens. So you'll see a CFL that says it's a 60-watt equivalent. And that doesn't mean it uses 60 watts of energy, but it should produce about the same amount of light as a 60-watt incandescent.
The other thing that can be a factor in this is that a lot of these more efficient bulbs take a little bit more time to get to full light intensity. We're kind of used to the incandescent bulb where you turn the switch and boom, everything's bright. And here you need to turn on, and maybe the best thing to do is to walk away for a minute or two and then come back and experience that full brightness. But in some ways, once you recognize it, sometimes it's on the other end as well. You turn the switch off and it might take a little while even for that bulb to kind of come all the way down. So, there isn't that instant satisfaction maybe, but frequently it's brighter than we think. It just takes a little while to get to that full intensity.
So Richard should look for on the package itself, it should say equivalent to a, let's say, 60-watt bulb or something like that.
Eventually, we'll all get used to thinking in lumens, but I think we're probably we're a ways off, aren't we, Andrea?
I think we're quite a ways.
Yeah, I'm a long ways from that anyway. Richard, thanks a lot for calling. And we'll get to Majid in just a minute, but I want to remind you that today that we're taking a look at environmental impacts of some of the products, some of the consumer products that you and I buy on a day-to-day basis. We've zeroed in a bit on lights, but we can talk about other things like the coffee we just mentioned in passing earlier. And I know Andrews Hicks is doing some work on silver in T-shirts. It's kind of interesting to me as well. And we'll talk about that as well. And, of course, take your questions at 1-800-642-1234. Email us at talk@wpr.org or post on our Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show. I'm Larry Mueller. Jill Nadeau, our on-air producer here on the Ideas Network. Coming up at 11:45, we're going to switch from lighting to lightning. We'll talk about weather with our weather guy, John Martin.
That was good, Larry.
Yeah, right now, though, we're going to continue to take a look at LED lighting and other kinds of consumer products. And something that researchers call the rebound effect, which I was quite interested when I was reading a little piece written about Andrea's work. Again, you can join in, 800-642-1234, email at talk@wpr.org, or post on our Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show. Love to hear from you. Let's go to, Jack in Milwaukee up next. Hi, Jack. Thanks for calling.
Hello, can you hear me?
Yes.
Hey, Larry. A couple things. I was wondering about if there's any sight damage with the LED lights and, you know, over continual use of using them and the intensity of that beam from the center of the LED. And the other thing is, is there any drop-off of light? I'm trying to think how to put it. How much value of light, you know, the lumens from the source of the LED.
Okay. All right, thanks for calling, Jack. Andrea, you want to chime in here?
Well, I haven't seen any data yet on damage for your eyes, so I'm not sure I could really answer that question. In terms of drop-off, yes, LEDs are a different technology than our conventional incandescents or compact fluorescents. So instead of just hearing that pop, maybe, and it burning out, there's more of a slow decline on your lumen or light output.
Majid in Madison, and we'll turn to you next. Thank you for calling. Hi.
Hello. Thank you for getting my call. I have two questions. One, the first question, she partially answered it, but not totally. That question is that the lumen per watt generated by LED is really not too much better than fluorescent light bulbs. For example, a 100-watt bulb is create about 800 to 900 lumens. The replacement, the incandescent bulbs, they are creating about 1600. Fluorescent light bulbs creating about 800. And then if you look at the majority of the LED lights, they are creating about 400 lumen for that 9.5 watt of energy that they are using. So therefore, the amount of light that generating compared to the energy that they are using is very close to the fluorescent light bulbs. That's one point. Another thing that I like her to specifically talk about it. Another question is, majority of LEDs are a little bit closer, have a higher temperature to the daylight, and then they are messing up the circadian clock and sleep patterns. So I'd like to see if she has something to say about changing our sleep patterns or making sleep disorders as a result of being a little bit bluer.
Mm-hmm. Okay, thank you very much for calling. Andrea, comments?
Yes, so an average 60-watt equivalent replacement, so it's about 800 lumens. Typically for an LED, it's about 9.5 watts, and you're right, a CFL would be about 13 watts. And one way I like to think about it was when I think about movies. And the quality of watching like a video cassette tape to a DVD player is a huge jump, and that's the incandescent to the CFL. But the jump from maybe a DVD player to a Blu-ray isn't quite as great with quality. And that's one way to think about the jump from a CFL to like an LED, that you'll see some energy savings, and you'll see an extended lifetime, but maybe not such a huge jump in energy efficiency. What I would say about the health impacts and sleep disorders is that the American Medical Association recently gave some guidance on this, and they were suggesting that we stick to the warmer LED lights. versus the cooler ones to minimize our impact on sleep disorders.
So warmer. And that's, and they're clearly marked on the package when you go to buy.
Yeah, increasingly you'll actually see a temperature scale, so you really can, you know, get some sense of, you know, where in the spectrum you are with a particular bulb. So the other thing I was just going to add in terms of the efficiency of the LED, which I think is not immediately obvious, is the fact we mentioned this earlier on, is that that light can be quite focused. And so we think about things like outdoor lighting. You know, we talked about being able to see all that light from above. It's much easier to focus an LED to where it's needed, and so, you know, there's the amount of energy it takes to make that photon, but then there's also just the ability to get that light to where you need it and not other places. And so we can save a lot through the LED technology, through some of these kind of, they're somewhat indirect means as well. So that I think can be very significant in certain uses.
Thanks very much for that question. I want to go, before we take more calls, and lots of callers online, let's talk about the rebound effect that I sort of mentioned earlier, and I need a little more clarification. Tell us about that.
Right. So the rebound effect is actually a fairly old idea from the 1800s by this economist named William Stanley Jevons, and he wrote a book called The Coal Question. And he saw that as efficiencies went up and prices went down, we used more. So it's the idea of, I buy this new, less expensive to use, energy efficient product, and I use more of it. And we've seen this historically with things like freight rail transportation, household refrigeration, airplane travel. And the more I talk to people about this, someone will tell me a story that they have this dark basement and they fall down the stairs. So now they bought an LED and they leave it on all the time because they feel safer.
Oh, well, maybe they are.
Right. And there's that question, though, of, are you going to use more? You're using more light.
Yeah.
So are you saving energy?
No, well, that's it. Or do you, if you have a Prius, I have lots of friends who own a Prius.
Exactly.
Do you drive more?
It seems pretty ubiquitous. I can look at myself and go, yeah, that, you know, it costs less to drive per mile. I'm tempted to just kind of, you know, vacations, just kind of roam a little further, right?
Yeah. So that's, and that's something you studied that a little bit, or?
Yes. I've looked at the rebound effect with respect to CFL incandescent and LED lighting, this idea of how much more would you have to use to erode savings? And based on some older work, if about half the population said, we did some survey work in Chicago and said, you know, would you use more? About half of people said they would. And if people used about 25% more when they replaced their bulbs, based on, you know, how many hours of light you leave your bulbs on and how many light bulbs on your house, it would take about 60 years to erode the savings from adopting LEDs.
Okay, so, yeah, and what if I change my incandescent bulb to a new LED bulb even though the incandescent isn't burned out?
Right, and that changes the environmental impact when you're like, oh, this is such a wonderful new technology, but I didn't fulfill the service life of my incandescent.
Let's go to Steele in Appleton.
It's complicated.
Yeah, it is. Steele, hi. Thanks for calling.
Yeah, hello, everyone. My question first started maybe a month ago, but I've known of this site for years, the International Dark Sky Association. And just as you, Ben, were talking about driving down the highway with these new headlights that are really bright,
yeah,
I've been helping a friend down in Racine, and I walk along the beach early morning to watch the astronomical twilight and watch morning come.
Mm-hmm.
And they have all these, they make them like glass lights, and now the LEDs, and they're bright, bright white, just as your guest had said, that there's warmer ones, which are more yellow. And so I can see Racine is changing to these bright ones, and they're very annoying. And I read an article that those lights are not good for critters, and just another guess, maybe even humans too, because I just can't stand it. So I go to the part of the lakeshore in Racine where they're still yellow. But stare at one of those white lights for an hour and see how crazy you get.
Well, John, you want to comment on that?
Well, you know, it's definitely an issue. You know, a similar statistic I recently heard is that at this point in time, only 30% of people in the United States have ever had the opportunity where they live to look up in the sky and see the Milky Way. So we definitely are spilling a huge amount of light at night in a way that, you know, creates all sorts of complications, aesthetics, and beyond. You know, and I think ultimately this is where, you know, LED technology, in addition to being more efficient, does allow us to, you know, be more focused and more directional in terms of where that light is going. You know, and so hopefully, you know, we'll be able to take advantage of that and be able to see more of a return to those clear, dark skies at night, or, you know, or those dawn hours, which can be so magical. So, you know, I think there, in the long run, I think there is more opportunity.
Yeah, I think the directionality is a big push for LED lighting, that we can control where our light's focused and focus it on things we want it to focus on.
And thanks for that call. Dolores in Kenosha, your turn. Hi, Dolores.
Oh, hi. Just a short comment on the person with the lighting on the stairway. As an older person and a retired nurse, any light you keep on the stairway for your safety saves you and everyone else a whole lot of energy that a hospital would use to take care of you when you break your hip.
Yeah.
But my reason I called was the solution to the single cup coffee makers is I purchased some reusable ones. And they're very sturdy, and I got, I think for, it was under $10 for sure. I got four of them, four different colors. So your tea drinker, your cocoa drinker, your decaf drinker, and your regular coffee drinker can all use a different color. And they're easily rinsable and work very well. And you don't have any little thing to clean away, and you can buy your coffee on sale.
There you go, Dolores. Well, let's talk about this whole business with these K-cups, these single. So, you know, and a lot of either people living alone or there's, even if you're living with others and only one person drinks coffee, let's say, you look at it and you think, well, geez, then I'm only making one cup. I've heard that coffee consumption production actually has gone down a bit because people aren't using as much coffee as they have in the past. But anyway, what do you think, Andrea? What's your research on that?
Well, I think we're wasting a lot less coffee if you're moving to a single-serve coffee pod. I mean, conventionally, you don't just brew a cup of coffee.
No.
You brew a pot of coffee. But maybe you only want one cup. So there's this issue of coffee wastage. But the big thing we found when we look at the environmental impact of brewing coffee, it's from the energy required to use your brewer, and it's from the actual impact of growing your coffee.
So that's even, so the cups don't really, they play a role, but not as much as we might have expected or thought?
Yes, exactly. So, you know, you've got that standard rule of thumb of 2 tablespoons per cup of coffee if you're using a conventional drip filter. And when you use a single-serve coffee pot, it uses less ground coffee per that to make the same amount of liquid coffee drink. And we're starting to see where there are these trade-offs that, yes, pods are more materials intensive, and what do you do with them after? But it's not such a clear-cut issue.
Okay, but now her idea of having a reusable one, I would think, would be, and I haven't tried those or haven't used those.
Nor have I. Yeah, that seems like a brilliant opportunity.
I've got some of those at home, actually. Maybe maybe not quite so many colors. I think mine are all red because that's what the store had. But you actually start using more coffee than in the mass-produced single-serve coffee pods. So there's this trade-off of you've got materials you can use again with that reusable mesh cup with the plastic on it. But if you're using more ground coffee, are you actually having a lower environmental impact?
So you're sneaking more coffee in there, Andrea, when you're...
Right, because there's that idea that you're going to pack it full and then close the lid.
And this overarching area of life cycle assessment, I think, is so fascinating this way, because as a consumer, you know, we only see this small fraction from cradle to grave. And, you know, there's all the things that come beforehand and everything that happens afterwards. And I think it is a very big question in terms of how do we, you know, get this kind of information to the consumer in a way that we can make informed decisions, I think, is really important.
Paul in Galesville, we turn to you next. Hi, Paul.
Hi, Larry. This is Paul Kinzer. I'm often on your show talking about astronomy.
Yeah,
I want to continue a comment that was made a little while ago by the fellow in Racine. We just had our lights replaced in my little town of Galesville with the new LEDs, and the directional aspect is important. They do shine down far better than the old ones. But as an astronomer, the issue is the color temperature. They measure it in degrees Kelvin, and most of the LEDs that are going in around the country are 4,000 degrees Kelvin. And what that means is there's a lot more blue light in the LED. It's actually a very natural white light. The problem with that for humans is that our eyes have rods and cones in them. Cones are for bright colored light, and the rods are for the dim light of nighttime. And that blue light saturates our rods. It actually makes it harder to see at night, and I definitely noticed that in my own yard. The shadows at night outside the light of those LEDs, they're far darker. I can't see into those shadows. And as an astronomer, I think this is a bad thing. But because it's so easy, they can just put in new LEDs. They don't have to replace the whole light fixture. Just put in cooler LEDs. Cities all around the country people are complaining, and they are replacing the LEDs, or they're halting the replacement until they figure this out. And the American Medical Association, I just read an article, they have come out saying that cooler LEDs are not the way to go. We want to use the warmer, more orangey-yellow ones.
Oh. Paul, thank you so much for calling.
Yeah, great explanation. Thank you, Paul.
Paul does a great job, actually, on my show as well. And and Andrea, you were nodding yes in agreement to everything he was saying.
Right, and he's exactly right. The American Medical Association came out saying that we should really be looking at 3,000 degree Kelvin LEDs or warmer to get sort of that orange or less cool blue light.
All right, let's go to Gary in Appleton. Your turn. Hi, Gary. Thanks for calling.
Hi, I have a comment and then a question. On the comment, I'm at an age where maybe I have a little bit of cataract, but I need cool light to be able to read well, and with the warmer light, I can't read in the house. And then my question is, I'd like to put the LEDs outside, like in a regular bulb in the garage fixtures and stuff and I noticed on the package it says, design light or limit is like -4 degrees or something on all the packages. But then the retailers say, oh, they work better in cold weather, so if it gets 20 below in Wisconsin, will the bulbs work?
No. Andrea, what do you think? Or John?
I do know. The LED technology is definitely newer. I know that there's issues along these lines with the compact fluorescent units. And actually, if you go to a store where there is a wider selection, I know at this point you can buy compact fluorescent bulbs, which are engineered for cold temperature use. So, at the very least, I'm not sure on the LED front, but with a compact fluorescent front, at this point you can get the bulbs will work outside. Because I wrestle with this problem as well. I live in a more rural area, so keep an eye out for those. So my guess is that'll be coming down the pike for LEDs as well.
Right. The majority of temperature issues with LEDs, they've actually been working on issues in warm temperatures. Down south, particularly, they have a lot of LED traffic control signals or stop-and-go lights.
Mm-hmm.
And the issue is that the LEDs get too hot and fail early, so you have these little checkerboards of the light.
Oh, interesting. Gary, thank you for calling. Appreciate it. So we have LEDs that work in pretty cold, very cold temperatures.
Yeah, the compact fluorescents, right.
Mitch in Madison, your turn. Hi, Mitch.
Hi. I was just calling because I wanted to say that I've been really happy with LED lights. You can get them in a variety of color. As some other folks said, I generally prefer the ones that are a little more yellow, those warmer ones.
Yeah.
But I don't even buy CFLs anymore. I've skipped mm-hmm. straight to LEDs. They're instant on. And they're actually, you can get them for free from, Focus on Energy. They'll send you a couple if you ask for them. I really want to highly recommend everyone, give them a shot because I think they're better than than the incandescents.
Yeah. All right.
That's great. Thank you, Mitch. And I think the point you make that we do have, you know, we do have the the opportunity to get these bulbs in different colors, different temperatures, I think is really significant. So I know they now even make systems where they're LED grow lights where you can, you know, grow plants really well under LED light, much more efficient. If you're a plant lover, consider that opportunity as well.
Thanks, Mitch. Appreciate it. Dan and Maribel, your turn. Thanks for calling.
Hello, thank you for taking my call. I have a comment on those coffee makers. We have one, and what it does is it has a reservoir of water that you keep in there, and it keeps that reservoir of water warm all day long, 24 hours a day, so that I can have one cup of coffee in the morning in 1 minute rather than if I unplug the reservoir after I'm done and plug it back in, it takes an extra minute or two. And it seems to me a waste of energy to keep that reservoir of water warm just so you can have a cup of coffee that much quicker.
Yeah.
Yes, Dan, that's an excellent observation. So if you're talking about a single-serve coffee machine and you leave it on standby all day where you have that warm reservoir, it actually takes a lot more energy and consumes a lot more energy than if you were to shut it off completely in between brewing cycles.
It's a classic, what we call leeches in the world of energy efficiency. And our life is full of them. We have all these things plugged in that are just constantly kind of pulling out a little of electricity. And once again, you know, any one of them doesn't seem like a big deal. But when you add up a whole, you know, house full of them, they can be really significant. And that's where power strips with switches and things like that can really help us kind of easily just kind of power all that down. Okay, and they're not obvious. That's a really good example.
You know, and... Well, actually, the one I have one, and it's, but mine is just shuts off. It doesn't, and I pour the water in the, you know, when I'm ready to get a cup, I just pour the water in and turn it on, and then, but then it shuts off automatically if I don't use it again.
Right, and there's the ones with the big reservoirs on the side where you could brew a pot of coffee a cup at a time.
Yeah.
And if you leave it so the little blue lights are on where you can select the cup size... And that sort of standby mode, it's where you consume a lot of the energy.
And like different models are going to have different efficiency. It's worth, you know, reading the fine print. It's worth taking the time because it wouldn't surprise me if, yeah, some models are better at addressing that issue than others.
So now, just here, we're about out of time. If you're so at home, when you're at home, what is your lighting like? Do you, somebody wondered, you know, what's the best for lighting in a home so I can read and feel comfortable in the home? What do you guys use?
I would really recommend experimenting, to be honest with you, because I've found that I like different colors of light, different temperatures, whatever, you know, in different times in different places. So buy a couple different ones and, you know, see what you like where and when.
Yeah, I've got a mix of CFLs and LEDs at my house. Just depending on the color temperature in my living room, I like it a little bit yellower, a little bit warmer. My basement's a little bit bluer.
Huh? Makes sense. So try it out.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, this has been fun. Thank you both so much for taking time to be with us today. It was really a lot of fun. Hope we can do this again.
Thanks, Larry.
Yeah, it was great to be here.
Appreciate it very much. Having some fun talking with John Greenler and Andrea Hicks. John directs education and outreach for the Great Lakes Bioenergy Research Center and the Wisconsin Energy Institute. Andrea, an assistant professor in the Department of Civil and Environmental Engineering at the University of Wisconsin-Madison. A lot of fun to have them with us, and we'll likely do it again. And as I said earlier, though, we're going to switch from lighting to lightning. The Lightning Man, John Martin, coming up next here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.